Hi everyone, I'm Gary Null. This is the Progressive Commentary Hour. Our theme today, the new age of techno, pharma, bioterrorism, and transhumanism. Topics that we would not have discussed 10 years ago, but today, it's here. It's not the future. The future is going to impact all of us. To help us in this tour of the future, and what it portends for us, is Professor Tim Coles. He is a researcher at the Cognitive Institute at Plymouth University in the United Kingdom, director of the Plymouth Institute for Peace Research, and a columnist writing about politics and human rights. I'm sure many of you read his articles in Newsweek, The Gray Zone, The New Statesman, Truth Out, Counterpunch, and other sources. He has frequently co-written essays with Australian investigative journalist John Pilger. Tim has written over 15 books, including Capitalism and Coronavirus, Real Fake News, Voices for Peace with Noam Chomsky, and most recently, Bioterrorism, the Tech Pharma Complex, and the End of Democracy, which traces the history of bioterrorism back to its 18th century eugenic roots up to the present with the emergence of surveillance capitalism, transhumanism, a techno-pharma regime, and more recently, the Great Reset being advanced by the World Economic Forum. Nice to have you with us today, Tim.
Thanks for the invitation.
We're going to speak about bioterrorism. However, you have a distinct definition or use for this term. And when we think of bioterrorism, we usually think of bioweapons, such as pathogenic organisms like anthrax, that are developed in a laboratory and then released into the world as an act of terror. But you're using the term in a broader context to refer to the developments and likely future of the merger of pharmaceutical and high-tech complexes. So please begin by summarizing how you're defining bioterrorism and then speak about the emergence of this social and economic and political force that has grown from this techno-pharmaceutical industrial complex. And then just as an aside, we have now learned that there are dozens of biotech labs in Ukraine. We were not told this. We're told that they were all peaceful, but what is the proof? Now we're told that some may fall in the hands of the Russians, and yet we have spent a lot of money on this. I'm questioning, why do we need these? So maybe in your answers, you can look at why we are doing everything in secret and always saying that it's peaceful when indeed it could be otherwise. The form is yours.
Perhaps we start with the situation in Ukraine. I think the starting point is 1997 when the US Space Command committed America to what it called full spectrum dominance of air, land, sea, space, and information. So that's everything. You can find this in the Space Command's Vision for 2020 document published in 97. And the Pentagon has never withdrawn this doctrine. And in fact, in the year 2020, Trump's so-called Space Force basically took over from the Space Command to achieve this goal. And at the time, at the United Nations Disarmament Commission, for example, several scholars pointed to the fact that if a country commits itself to world domination, which is what full spectrum dominance is, then other countries will be expected by their populations to try to counter this. And so anything that happens geopolitically should be seen through the lens of Washington's commitment to trying to dominate the world. And the reasons for this new imperialism are spelled out in the document. They say it's to protect U.S. interests and investments. But of course, U.S. means elite corporate. It doesn't mean ordinary working class Americans. And so Russia is one of the obstacles to this. So in the mid-2000s, the Institute for Strategic Studies at the U.S. Army War College, they published a document that explained that since Vladimir Putin came to power in Russia, he had been an impediment to U.S. imperialism. The U.S. thought that they had a kind of pliant puppet in the form of Yeltsin. But this reversed when Putin came to power, and Putin started to he stopped favoring U.S. corporate contracts and had a project of renationalization of Russian industries. So this became an ideological as well as a financial threat to the U.S. And a lot of the Cold War era policy wonks are still informing American foreign policy. So what the U.S. did when the Soviet Union broke up, they immediately tried to de-weaponize a lot of the Soviet countries, Ukraine included. So the threat reduction project from the Pentagon is one of many. And the alleged reason for this was to disarm Ukraine and other countries. But what we've actually found out is that in addition to disarming them, the US was basically rearming them, but with US weapons. And the biological aspect of this is supposed to counter threats of bioterrorism, but also, for example, zoonotic diseases, things that occur in nature. What appears to be really going on, of course, is that any kind of biological research can quite easily be weaponized. And we saw that with the Wuhan lab, where under Obama, it was considered too dangerous to conduct gain-of-function research, which is the deliberate enhancing of viruses to make them more transmissible and even to be able to jump species. The professed reason is so that they can be studied more easily and therapeutics and palliatives developed. But of course, this is of interest to bioweapons researchers because the same thing that can harm can potentially heal and vice versa. And so in Ukraine, it's been plausibly speculated that what turns out to be a couple of dozen bio research labs could actually be weaponized. And this is in the broader context of the US sort of outsourcing this research to other countries. I mentioned Wuhan, and Ukraine is a potentially another example. Even if it turns out not to be true, it's still potentially a significant threat to Russia to have potential bioweapons labs on its border. So that's, I think, the context with the Ukraine situation. And the other points about bioterrorism, I actually call it biofascism, which is the title of the book, because I think we've entered into a new world now. After the Second World War, famously, Dwight Eisenhower cautioned against the military-industrial complex. What that was a permanent war economy in which things like we're doing now, computers, the internet, satellites, they were developed by U.S. taxpayers through the military under the cover of research and development and then transferred to private monopolies. It's not even capitalism. It's monopoly capitalism. And this created corporations of unprecedented size and power, IBM and Microsoft, and a new generation of what's now called centibillionaires, where people are worth over $100 billion, Bill Gates, for example. This is the state basically creating a military-industrial complex. After 9/11, this transformed into the second phase, what was called the intelligence-industrial complex. So the NSA, for example, National Security Agency, was given huge budgets under the pretext of counterterrorism. They would monitor and surveil and interfere with everything we were doing, phone calls, geolocation from iPhones, websites visited. Everything was going into massive data dumps, like in the new Utah data center. And this was also commercialized in the same way that the internet and computers were when they came out of the military sector. So, for example, the CIA's venture capital firm, InQtel, they created Google. When the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, DARPA, closed its program called LifeLog, where they're going to log every aspect of your life, then Zuckerberg's Facebook opened. So, and of course, they've famously or infamously been collaborating with the intelligence agencies. For example, in their statements to Congress, Zuckerberg and Dorsey acknowledged that U.S. intelligence had influenced their decision to ban Donald Trump's accounts from their platforms. So these are just agencies of the state, and they are giant monopolies. And we're now into the third phase of this. So we've gone from the military-industrial complex to the intelligence-industrial complex. I now call this new era the tech-pharma complex, because these tech companies are way out of control. They have unprecedented stock value, market capitalization. They have unprecedented power to censor, deplatform, to shadow ban, to try and control not only information, but the kind of information that, to set the parameters of what's tolerable in their own little societies. And at the same time, we've seen the emergence of basically regulatory capture by Big Pharma. So if you look at the, for example, the CDC Foundation, it's funded by Big Pharma. And of course, media are now basically bought by Big Pharma. They've been pushing this experimental product, which they call a vaccine. And we haven't really seen anything like this before. So I think the state-backed monopolization of corporations that have technology that emerge from militarism have now gone right into the mainstream of healthcare. And this is obviously extremely worrying, because in the past, the military-industrial complex would try and make it impossible not to use its products, like the internet, obviously, now, and computers. The other phase of this, it was very authoritarian, in the sense that the NSA, etc., would not only spy on us, but these big data brokers would commercialize our data. But now we've gone a step further, to the point where our very biology and bodily sovereignty is now being not only commercialized, but used as points for surveillance.
I appreciate the overview. Thank you. I personally find that the assumptions being made behind the transhumanist movement to integrate human body biology with computer-driven artificial intelligence poses one of the greatest threats to the human species. I can appreciate that those who might believe that the human being is nothing more than an assemblage of physical parts that evolved during the course of millions of years might believe that transhumanism is completely feasible as a proposition and is in line with biological evolutionary theory. But it makes some very flawed and frankly dangerous, foolish assumptions. The transhumanist premise, as I understand it, is based upon a belief, and is nothing more than a belief, that the human mind and consciousness is nothing more than a product of the physical brain. That means all of our thoughts, memories, emotions, and feelings are nothing more than physical neurological activity, that it would almost mean that there is no such thing as free will, and therefore nobody is ethically responsible for anything. We're just self-programmed robots. Aside from that being completely contrary to fundamental laws of physics, there's not an iota of scientific evidence to support this belief. In fact, there's absolutely no consensus in the scientific community as to what the mind or consciousness actually is or are. However, those who espouse transhumanism, such as Yuval Harari, a person who I feel is extremely irresponsible, but he is also the number one spokesperson for Klaus Schwab and the New Reset, the Great New Reset, through the World Economic Forum. And he is everywhere. He's ubiquitous. And so many neuroscientists believe that they have answered this question already. And the high-tech firms that you allude to that want to integrate the brain with chips that read our thoughts and other invasive technologies that the World Economic Forum drools over rely on this false belief to advance their technologies and financial interest. And one final thought. I've been a scientist my entire adult life, 33 years as a senior research fellow at the Institute of Applied Biology and director of their anti-aging division. Now, I've worked with a lot of people one-on-one, tens of thousands. And for someone to say that a belief has no power, a faith has no power, hope has no power, love has no power, it's all irrelevant. You have no free will. You're just mechanistic. To me, that flies in the face of everything that makes life feasible and self-evident. And yet they deny all this. Now the new science has gone one step further than just a year ago. A year ago, it was with Elon Musk and others having this device that looks like a spinal column that goes over up the spine and over the head like a cap. That's now considered old. They have new technology that doesn't require a chip in the brain, but rather a way of reading the brain, reading your thoughts, and then reforming your memories, reforming your behavior, your perceptions, where they can actually, they can have an algorithm that knows more about you than you, they're claiming, that can then foresee what you might do in a given circumstance and therefore change it to meet what is expected of you. Now, this is not just a social credit score like China has. This is a behavioral score where they control you through controlling your behavior. So therefore, you will not even have a thought that can be against the establishment or corporate interest. You must agree with it happily, as if you're a Stepford wife, if you know the reference to the movie The Stepford Wives. And this is going on now as we speak. And when I saw how they now created an artificial intelligence that is teaching itself and other artificial intelligences what programs to install that no longer requires human input. In fact, they're hopeful that artificial intelligence will not go awry, will not go rogue, will not go radical. But there is absolutely no guarantee that that won't be the case. Could you delve into these areas, please? Your thoughts.
I would say that since human beings first came around, we have tried to augment ourselves, for example, by designing and throwing spears to make it more efficient to catch prey. And this has now got to the point where we've gone from democratic tribal societies in which we had mutual agreement for this kind of thing. When a new medicine or a new technology had been invented and tried, it was something that the group would be able to design and participate in. But what we're seeing today is the point where we no longer have any kind of control over our environment. The environment controls us. This is an inversion of what augmentation started as. And there are, of course, forces that would seek to profit from these. There are forces that seek total control over humans. And there is a split within transhumanist thinking. Some believe that human beings are not even necessary. And to quote the infamous phrase, the future doesn't need us. There are others who warn that if we do pursue this route, it might be that technology takes over completely and destroys us. if that did happen, it would probably come about through nuclear weapons. At the moment, the escalation of the war in Ukraine has pushed the world closer, probably than it's been since at least the 1980s, if not earlier, to terminal nuclear war. And if you look through the history of nuclear war and potential launches of weapons, it has been computer error, where human beings think they can augment their capacities by relying on computer systems for analysis of nuclear situation. And the computers have malfunctioned, and they've mistaken all sorts of things for incoming launches, which are not real. And so they launch what they're programmed to launch as a counterattack. And it takes a human being to intervene to stop what otherwise would be a nuclear Armageddon. And this has happened repeatedly in recent history. And so if the transhumanist agenda does wipe us out, it's probably going to be because of nuclear accident and escalation. Meanwhile, what I call the tech pharma complex, the ideological backers of this are the ones you mentioned, the World Economic Forum with the Great Reset. They do have an agenda which, looking quite closely at some of their literature, I think it's counter-revolutionary. They understand that corporate globalization has destroyed people's livelihoods. It's destroyed cultures. I'm certainly not on the right wing. I have nothing against immigrants or immigration. I'm an immigrant myself now, living in France. But I'm talking about corporate immigration. When a corporation says, we're going to go and get cheap labor in another country, and it ends up putting workers in competition and destroying jobs at home and exploiting people abroad. The World Economic Forum understands this is happening, but they benefit from this system. So they want to continue this system, but with added new technologies that are going to monitor the population. And I've noticed that what they do is they take potential revolutionary leaders and intellectuals, and they absorb them into the World Economic Forum culture, and then they come up with strategies. It might be under the pretense of greening the environment, to have environmentally friendly housing, for example. It might be this new phenomena of the so-called gig economy, where everybody has a temporary contract and no formal workers' rights. So they try to design working environments in which people can have the basic human needs to socialize and time for rest and time for leisure. But really, it's like a 24-hour work environment. And if you put all this together, it's a way of stopping people from having a revolution against the system that they themselves understand is actually exploitative and is actually reducing people's living standards. So under the pretext of being pro-environment or population control, they're actually trying to stop people from changing the future and having democratic control over their own lives. And of course, the technological aspect is a very important one, because if people can be linked up to what's called the Internet of Things, then not only can their data be commercialized in real time, but the certain systems, whether it's corporations, law enforcement, intelligence, they then have complete access to every aspect of your life. But the biofascist element of this, which I talk about in the book, is the fact that it's gone from beyond the environment to now your body. And there's now this concept of the Internet of Bodies, in which people are talking about not only having wearables like watches that can monitor your health, but also these ingestible things and indeed injectable things. such as biosurveillance, which can then be linked up to external systems to track and monitor and indeed profit from the individual. So whether or not you believe that human beings are just flesh and bone and nothing else, or whether there's a whole different concept of what constitutes consciousness and what we perceive as physical reality, whether there are different dimensions and so on. The point is, whatever your belief, we all should have the right to exist without being controlled and exploited. And what the transhumanists propose is that we have no such rights, and indeed we cannot have any of these rights, because having them would be against their system, and it would be against their ability to control and profit from it. So the pandemic really gave these people the excuse to push this system. And I think before the pandemic, we had several authoritarian vectors. One was big finance in the form of these new asset management companies, BlackRock, Vanguard Group, State Street, Fidelity, a few others. They have bought everything. They've bought through institutional majority shareholdings. They've bought Big Pharma, Alphabet, and Facebook, and Amazon. And they have also they've bought the big data. They've bought Big Pharma, Pfizer, and the other companies, and they've bought the media too. And the other authoritarian vector are big data themselves. I mentioned earlier, and I think we've all experienced it, the censorship and the shadow banning and the re-ranking of search results to make sure that we don't get access to information that we want, but rather access to information that they provide for us. And the third authoritarian vector was Big Pharma's regulatory capture and capture of propaganda. So we're just deluged now with pro-injection propaganda, which you know, it's almost completely devoid of science or logic or reasoning. And so when the pandemic came along, these vectors sort of merged together. And the kind of ideological driver of this is transhumanism.
Well, let's take it a little deeper. What can you share about the progress that has been made so far for the transhumanist project, especially in the defense military industries like DARPA, which have a huge incentive to pursue this kind of technology? Now, I never thought I would see this. I'm not a fan of the New York Post. Generally speaking, it's sports I like, not a lot of others. But here is a front page over the weekend. I don't know if you can see this. It says, spies who lie. 51 heads of intelligence agencies or top-level people within the intelligence community who all stated unequivocally and absolutely for years that the Russians were behind the election of Trump, and yet there were four congressional investigations. Not one showed that that was true, and these were not Trump's allies doing these investigations. But also, they all signed off on a letter stating that Hunter Biden's laptop was fake. It was a Russian ploy. Now, the New York Times has acknowledged, no, it's real. And all the evidence shows that it was real. So this tells me that these same people, their names and their photos are here, which is good. These are the people who are also involved in the military defense, the intelligence agencies. They have all these interconnecting lines, and they're never honest about anything. They lie. And yet, as many times as they've been caught lying, the very people who lie to us about everything are the very people who are never questioned about their integrity, about the safety and efficacy of their advice. So if they say get a vaccine, it must be assumed that they're safe or effective. These people would never manipulate you. And yet they lie. They do. If they say these, the anthrax was not a biologically manipulated organism, they lied. It was later found out to be coming from one of their own labs. Fort Detrick, they lied. They've been experimenting on us. I wrote the article, the first of its kind, in the October issue, 1989, of a major national magazine about how we, the public, were being experimented upon without our knowledge or consent. And yet they lied, said it wasn't true. It later showed it was true. Hold just one second, please. Sorry, I was giving a two-hour webinar earlier today. A little hoarse.
Well, I'm not surprised.
Sorry. Rodney, please make note at 10:07. That's 36 minutes into the interview. My concern is that the very agencies that are supposed to be watching over the American public to make sure it's not exploited, taken advantage of, or in any way manipulated to its harm are the very people who are doing the manipulating and the lying. I'm concerned about DARPA. I'm concerned about unlimited budgets. I'm also very concerned about who do we believe. We can no longer believe these 51, we can no longer believe anything these 51 so-called intelligence experts saw, because were these the same intelligence experts, along with the Pentagon, who didn't see the collapse of Afghanistan and creating one of the largest air forces in the world for the Taliban and all the destruction that occurred because of them? Are these the same experts? Who's held accountable for making big mistakes that impact negatively to people? 24 million Afghanistan citizens are now on starvation alert, right? Yet we're doing nothing to challenge that and help them. Are these the same people that told us through their agencies and then through other agencies like the CDC and the FDA and U.S. Public Health Service that, the coronavirus came from nature? And then the articles that their scientists, their inside scientists, said couldn't have been manipulated, all wrote a letter to The Lancet. Now that's been shown to have been fraudulent. The New England Journal of Medicine, a letter and an article, fraudulent. Journal of the American Medical Association, fraudulent. These are very respected institutions, and rarely are they ever challenged. Now we're finding out that every single agency of government must be challenged before you accept anything. Are these the same people who told us weapons of mass destruction existed and then gave us all of the fog of war benefit to the American industrial complex? And now it's the military intelligence industrial complex. And you say that behind all of these corporations, all of these pro-war, all of these pro-anything infecting us or impacting us are a small handful of companies. BlackRock, you mentioned, Vanguard, you mentioned, State Street, you mentioned. We could also throw in there Berkshire Hathaway and several others. They control trillions of dollars each in investments. They buy into corporations. Their name is never there. The Rockefellers, the Rothschilds, who do you think influences their investment strategies? You never see their names on anything. So they have plausible deniability. Who would know that Coca-Cola and Pepsi-Cola are owned by these people? You think you have competition in the media? When we had 1,900 different outlets, you did. Now we have 7 principal media outlets for radio, television, print, and they're controlled by the same companies and controlled by the investors behind them. So how do we know anything they're telling us about transhumanism, artificial intelligence, robotics, these being our future, when at the same time, they're telling us to take out student loans through their banks that they control to run up debt for careers that won't be there when a student graduates? Probably a good 60% of all the people going to college today in the United States will not have a living wage waiting for them when they get out. When I graduated from college, there were 3 jobs for every applicant. and living wage jobs. Not today. They control that. So why don't they tell us the truth? Why don't they tell us, since they have the algorithms about everything in our mind, saying, hold on a second, we can't really have you go to Brown University or Harvard or State University because, well, in 5 years, robotics will have taken that over. Artificial intelligence take over most of law. Why would you hire a lawyer for $400 an hour when artificial intelligence has read every legal brief in history, every lawsuit in history, the outcomes of every legal issue, and can give you the right information you need in less than 60 seconds? Yet none of that is done. Why don't they tell you about the downside of eating artificial manufactured foods, genetically engineered foods? They won't tell you that. But they, the people you were mentioning, the Klaus Schwab inside circle, you know, the Davos group, they control the big farms, the industrial farms, which now are being run in part by Silicon Valley, because they're doing it all without the idea that we as individuals should own farms. We should have jobs. We should be eating anything but their foods, taking their medicine, taking their endless boosters. And if they have no science, zero science showing that they're safe and effective. If they were safe and effective, then why don't they allow us to be able to sue them if we get injured? And yet they control all the data. They control everything. Then they control the policymakers and opinion leaders to go forward. So these are the people that we're supposed to trust unquestionably with our lives, with our future. And one of the most nefarious is DARPA. Could you take us there, please? And if anything I've just said is wrong, please feel free to challenge anything that I just said that you feel is incorrect, inaccurate, or out and out wrong.
People are born into this system, and their parents often go along with the system, and they're brainwashed at school to accept the system. And so unless the individual happens to be very contrarian, or something happens in their life that causes them to question, people internalize a lot of the propaganda, such as the intelligence agencies are there to protect you. But somewhere along the way, they got corrupted. But that's never been the case. The intelligence agencies in all countries are there to protect the elites. They're not there for the benefit of the population. And as we've seen throughout history, whether it's in the UK, MI5 launching what they called counter-subversion operations against the public, these were actually subverting the public, because they see the country, the system, as theirs, and they see the public as subverting it. So they have to counter the public. So they countered anti-nuclear war campaigners. They countered trade unionists. And it's the same in the US with COINTELPRO, which ran from the 50s until the 70s and almost certainly carries on in one form or another. In which they countered labor unions and the New Left and the civil rights and many, many others. So there's nothing to suggest that these intelligence agencies exist for the benefit of people. They're part of the systems of control. And unfortunately, many people internalize this propaganda. And they do the same with the media. They say that the media don't do their job in holding power to account. But actually, the media do their job in protecting power. You can go back to the 70s when the Trilateral Commission, which I believe is still going, it was kind of the World Economic Forum of its day with all the big corporations. They wrote a book called The Crisis of Democracy, in which they said the public are taking politics into their own hands, and we can't have that. And in the book, they describe journalists as gatekeepers. So the role of the media and of journalists in the big corporations, big corporate media, and it's basically state corporate media, their role is to propagandize people and to keep them under a kind of spell. So I think that they do their job very well. but their job is a nefarious one, and it's anti-democratic. And all of these institutions need to be democratized. And as far as the amount of lying from anything, whether it's about terrorism or about the alleged vaccine, they understand that it's impossible to tell the public the truth because their agenda is so nefarious. And so they have to lie about it. Sometimes the elites internalize their own propaganda and believe that they're actually good people doing the right thing. But very often in their own documents, we see questions like, how can we deceive the public? What's the best methods to do it? So they often know what they're doing. And where this leads us, of course, is to a population that's very much controlled by fear. Fear of immigrants, fear of terrorists, fear of viruses, and anything that can sort of stampede people, sheep herd them through fear in a particular direction is always going to be beneficial for people in power. And the difference, I think, between now and the past is that these systems of control are not only immensely profitable, but they actually now involve our very bodies themselves, whereas before the propaganda seemed to be external. And this is where DARPA comes into it, as you mentioned, the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency. And even the title of that is a good example of what I'm talking about. It used to be called ARPA, the Advanced Research Projects Agency, but they added defense on there to make people think that it was necessary for their security. And actually, it was just about creating this state-backed monopoly economy of big tech. So under DARPA contracts, we had basically the modern climate science. It was a big computer called ILIAC, if I'm not mistaken. And they didn't even know what to do with it. They had such massive budgets and it had such computing power. This was 60s and 70s. They thought, what is in the world that requires so much computing data that we could justify the existence of this machine? So they decided to start investigating the climate. So even climate science comes out of this system. So that means that the most important things in our lives at the moment, nuclear energy, climate change, things that can cause destruction, pandemics, it's been militarized through this DARPA system. And we saw really from the 1990s, particularly under Bill Clinton, he was awarding tens of billions of dollars to startups for tech to stimulate a new biotech industry. Including nanotech, which is very dangerous because the smaller particles are, the more potential they have for to be carcinogens. And although nanoparticles exist in nature, the artificially engineered nanoparticles have not been put through the standard kind of health and safety tests. So we've got a whole new generation of nano products, again, thanks to state backing, which have not been tested in the way that other products are usually tested for health and safety. And for all we know, they could be giving people cancer. They're also part of this control mechanism. We've seen the military is very interested in nanotechnology, for example, in explosives. The smaller the particles, the greater the potential for the explosive yield. So very interesting for their bombs and rockets. And as far as biotech is concerned, the smaller the particles, potentially the easier they are to enter the body undetected. So if they want to put a vaccine into somebody and the body doesn't reject it, they have the potential to do that through this nanotech. And a lot of this research is being funded under DARPA. And so we have, far from the democratization of science and technology, we have exactly what Eisenhower warned about, which is a scientific elite, in his words, controlling a lot of this technology. And the example that you mentioned with the fraudulent letter being published in The Lancet, this was basically the National Institutes of Health. I think that the Pentagon had rejected the research because it was too dangerous. So the NIH decided to basically take it up, but to contract it out through this company, Eco Health Alliance, and to contract it, to outsource it to China. So the sort of footprints that led to their door got longer and longer, so you couldn't really trace it to them. And then when the disaster unfolded, they had to concoct this statement that the virus could not possibly have been engineered. It had to have been natural, covering their tracks. So these are examples of what can happen when you have unaccountable power that can hide behind the veils of national security, that lie by profession for a living, and that have unlimited taxpayer funding.
Let me add, Tim, let me just interject an example to show you how brilliant their strategy is. On the one hand, they are the primary owners by the amount of stock they control. Generally, it's controlling stock. They control the board of directors. So let's just say that they own 80% of the large food companies. And let's say the large food companies have divisions, and one of the divisions is breakfast cereals. Those are all unhealthy and clearly lead to diabetes and other conditions, especially in children. So now they're profiting from children getting sick, no different than all the high meat diets that are served in these fast food restaurants. As a nutritionist, as a PhD in human nutrition and public health science, and as a registered dietitian and clinician in nutrition science, I can tell you there's not a single study in the world, and I read thousands of studies, that shows that having bacon in your diet is going to make you healthier. No, it's carcinogenic. So they control the diet that the average American eats. That then means that the uncontrolled consequence is diabetes, heart disease, cancers. They then own the hospitals, even owning primary shares in these equity partners that buy up the hospitals. They then control the treatment you get. So if you're getting a treatment with a drug that costs you $1,000 or $5,000 a treatment, that's theirs. Then they control the insurance companies to see whether or not you're going to be the bill's going to be paid in part or whole or not. So then when you are getting treated, it's their treatment in their hospitals. The insurance is their insurance. The cause of all this was them. They control the media that gets the advertising. 85% of television advertising comes from Big Pharma, which they control. So if you look, it's a circle, a complete circle. And so everything is meant to benefit them. Right now, a person diagnosed with COVID going into a hospital can cost over $100,000 before the person's either released or dead. And every single step they're profiting, one of their divisions. You just don't see all of these interconnecting lines with what amounts to a relatively small group of individuals. And yet, one of the presidents of the largest, one of the three largest investment houses, sits on the board of the World Economic Forum. Am I supposed to believe that somehow that does not impact the World Economic Forum's impressions? And he happened to have been one, along with Angela Merkel and Trudeau and Barack Obama and Vladimir Putin, the people that they groomed over a period of decades to be their new young leaders. So now they control the banking system. You want that student loan? They control the banks. You go to a particular university, they can control the debt. They're going to profit from that, as well as U.S. government. So no matter where you go in life, they're controlling something. And yet we're not aware of who they are, their names, how much money they control, how it impacts us. We could have universal health care and should, But we don't, because they don't want it. And they buy the politicians. They control the politicians. So we're coming up to the last 6 minutes of our program. I'd like your thoughts on how this is going to play out now that they've used the COVID and they're using Ukraine, same way. Who profits from Ukraine, all these weapons going in? We're not giving those as gifts. You know, someone's going to pay for those. We don't care how much corruption goes on, and it's all corrupt in Ukraine. You know, that's irrelevant. It's who's controlling all these policies, and all of the profits come from them. Look at who controls the money flow, and you'll see how the dynamic, the political element creates there. Just tie that all together, if you could, and then look at a Mark Zuckerberg, and look at his new Meta corporate venture, and look at how these people who are really, in my opinion, they're intellectually challenged. They're spiritually devoid. They have no appreciation for the consequences of their actions. They don't care. And what can we do about it? Is there a solution that you can foresee that we, who have been, well, we've been brought into their cult, how can we get out of it? Your final thoughts, please.
Sometimes the level of evil bankrupts itself. We've seen that with the first injection, second, third, and now they're talking about a fourth. People that my wife and I know, friends, family, who did go along with the first injections, by the third one, even that was too much for them. And I've noticed in the statistics, I mean, that's just anecdotal, but in the statistics, I've noticed a big decline in the number of people who had the first injection compared to the number that are willing to have the third. So sometimes these people in power destroy their own agenda because they want to go too hard and too fast. I'd be very surprised if the fourth injection has anywhere near the uptake as the first two. The other thing is dedicated protest and a refusal to go along with what's being imposed. I mentioned that I'm now an immigrant. I live in France. And when the French imposed this system where you couldn't function in normal society unless you'd been injected, a lot of restaurateurs and bar owners, they just refused to go along with it. So you could find networks of people that were not willing to go along with this system. You didn't have to go along with the authoritarianism, the biofascism, I call it, where they demand that you be injected with an experimental product from which the monopoly corporations are indemnified. It was obvious anyway, but what we now know is based on completely fraudulent clinical trial data, compromised data. So people who were willing to resist and did protest have had massive success because now the mandates are being rolled back. And we're seeing an end to a lot of this. They've recently lifted most of the mandates in France. The UK did the same. And so I think this wouldn't have happened without the sustained, dedicated protests. If everybody had just gone along with it, we would have probably been seeing a mandated fourth and a fifth and a sixth injection. So sometimes, unfortunately, as the poet W.H. Auden said, the dreadful martyrdom must run its course. Sometimes that does happen. But also, people can resist, and it does have effects. We've seen it throughout history for completely different issues, and we've seen it to the present.
Tim, thank you for those closing remarks. I'll just add this. The newest technology is really dangerous. They want and are actually working on now, and have much of this done, the ability to motivate your thoughts. In other words, to implant their thoughts into your brain. So you're thinking the way they want you to think. Now think of all the people who are depressed and anxious, uncertain, who just don't care. They're going to be the first targets. They're going to sugarcoat all this, making it seem like it's for our best interest. It is not. And I agree with you that we must exercise our freedom of choice. I wish that the larger medical and scientific community, the millions that there are, over almost 900,000 doctors and millions of scientists, join together and say, yes, we should have open and honest debate. We should not have censorship. And we should not have these colossals telling us what's good for us or what's not good for us. That is our responsibility. We cannot be passive. They have lulled us into this passive spectator of all life. And we've got to wake up, get out of the chair, take off the headset, turn off the television, turn off the computer, and go outside and see there's a real world. And we have a right to join that world again. Thank you very much. J.T. Tim Coles, C-O-L-E-S. He is an author and he's a professor. And you can read his books. You can read his articles online. What is the website you'd like to refer people to who can get up to date on all your stuff, Tim?
I don't really have a single point of where people can go, but I write for the Gray Zone, for example. You can find me there. And okay. The latest book is called Biofascism.
Good. Well, then that's a place to start. Thank you very much for being with us here on the Progressive Commentary Hour.
Thank you.
I'm Gary Knoll. Thank you all for watching. If you find this information relevant, important, then share it with others. Have a nice day.